Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
Welcome back to Peak Speak. I'm Thomas Lilly. Joining me as always is John Sheridan from Burley Strength. And today we're going to speak about a subject that's very close to both of our hearts. We're going to talk about a case for coaching. So basically covering why we believe that coaching is so important, why we believe that if you're a lifter in powerlifting or in other sports as well, that why you should get a coach, and also cover what makes a good client and what makes a good coach.
Also what makes not a good coach.
Yeah. Yeah, and what makes not a good client as well.
Yeah.
So, I can't believe this.
You're just stuck, smooth. Yeah. So we're going to start initially with talking about why you should have a coach, right? Now, obviously, Thomas and I are a little bit biased because we are professional coaches. That's what we do for a living. Unlike a lot of professional coaches you'll see on Instagram and the internet, neither Thomas nor I have a job on the side. This is what we do for a full-time living. So we're pretty committed to the process. So obviously we're always going to lean towards you should have a coach. But I think there's a couple of reasons that are really important for why you should have a coach, regardless of what that field is, be it success in powerlifting or success in business or any other aspect of life. I think if you want to be really successful, a coach is one of the best ways to do that for a couple of reasons. Accountability is the first one. A lot of people get really motivated, especially this time of year. We're currently recording this towards the end of November. When it comes out, who knows? This time of year is everyone's like talking about New Year's resolutions and things like that. And a lot of people go real hard for the first couple of weeks and then it fizzles out really quickly because motivation is fleeting, right? That's the problem with motivational speakers and motivational videos and all that sort of stuff is it's transient. It comes and goes. And I think if you have a coach who's there just to hold you accountable, mostly for your bullshit excuses, but just someone who can keep you on track, who can have a bit of an external view of things, I think is really important as well, like that objective third party, because I know from my point of view, when I'm making excuses, I'm pretty fucking good at making excuses. And I can do that really well and convince myself of anything if I really want to. But having someone there to call you on your bullshit, I think is really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one thing that goes with that accountability is that the coaching process is defined by structure. It provides structure.
Yeah.
And it keeps accountability to that structure. So in English, it stops you from doing dumb shit.
Yeah.
It stops
you from... It doesn't stop you. It is far more likely to stop you doing dumb shit.
Exactly.
People still do some dumb shit.
Yeah,
that's true. We're going to talk on that one.
Yeah, that's very true. But it provides more encouragement for adherence to that structure. And adherence to that structure is ultimately what's going to yield the best results.
Yeah, 100%.
I think ultimately coming to that results-based approach, coaching is the best shortcut there is. That's what coaching is all about. It's about getting you the results you want quicker. And people will do everything they can to try and get results straight away. Everyone wants everything straight away. The best shortcut that I can think of and the best shortcut that I wish I had when I started out 14, 15 years ago was a good coach.
Yep.
People come to us to pay us to not make the mistakes that we made when we started out. And I think that's really important. John's got a good analogy with that around a locksmith.
Yeah, so I think between us, we worked out just before, it's almost 30 years of lifting experience. I've done some really dumb things in that time, but I heard this analogy about coaching and about expertise and mastery and stuff like that. And it was from this point of view of a locksmith, right? Now, let's say at some point, hypothetically, you lock yourself out of your house and you get a locksmith who comes to help you pick the lock and get your keys back out, And that locksmith's relatively new to the field, and it takes them 45 minutes to pick your locks and get you in the front door, and they charge you $150, and you go, well, that was 45 minutes, that dude worked hard for 45 minutes, that's cool, like, I'll pay that $150. But if 10 years down the road, that same locksmith comes back, and he lets you into your house again, but it takes him 2.5 minutes, a lot of people balk at the idea of paying $150 for 2.5 minutes. I'm not going to make the analogy I was going to make there about the businesses that surround my gym in Fishwick. But that $150 doesn't actually represent the 2 minutes, or just represent the 2 minutes that that locksmith spends picking your locks. What it represents is 10 years of experience at that point. It's every minute of every hour that that locksmith has put into learning their craft. And I think from our point of view, I've spent 14, 15 years doing really dumb things in the gym. I've done dumb things and got results. I've done dumb things and not got results. I've made those mistakes so that you don't have to. So you can learn from those experiences. And that's not to say I know everything or Thomas knows everything. I don't think either of us have ever claimed to know everything there is to know. We're both always learning and always looking to improve on our knowledge and our experiences and things like that. But it's the cumulative experience that you're paying for. And at this point, we both coach, you know, hundreds of people. So not only do we have a view of what we do and what we did right and what we did wrong, but also we can start to see a bigger picture about what works for certain groups of people. Because obviously not everyone is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have certainly started to see patterns in how people respond to things and those sort of things. And so having a big group to then start to test these theories on is really useful, because then you're getting that experience. But much from a coaching perspective, we're getting it much quicker because we have a bigger group of people.
Definitely. Definitely. And it, I mean, that kind of touches on the idea around just, you know, it's often referred to in many industries about, you know, book smarts versus not street smarts, but that practical experience.
Yeah, experience versus knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we're both the kind of people that are driven to get more knowledge, but we also have the outlet to apply that.
Yeah.
And get experience in that way. And in doing so, you get better at coaching. And as long as you endeavor to keep learning, your product that you're giving out becomes better. I really like that locksmith analogy.
On the knowledge thing, I heard a really cool thing the other day. Knowledge is knowing that tomatoes are fruit. Wisdom is knowing that you don't put tomatoes in fruit salad. I think that's a really important part, right? Like, if you look at how, like, a lot of, especially with the age of the internet and, like, everyone does seminars and workshops and stuff like that, lots of people want to get this new knowledge and apply it straight away.
Mm-hmm.
But actually the real skill comes in having the knowledge and having the critical thinking to then look at how that impact has an impact upon your bigger picture and where it fits into that piece.
Mm. Yeah, and I think the mark of really smart people is that the smarter you get, the more you realize you don't know.
Yeah.
So there is more incentive to continue to learn, to continue to gain that knowledge and experience. You know, when it comes to this coaching perspective, when it comes to this why, one thing I like to ask people is if you could have all the results that you wanted injury-free in a year, what sort of price would you put on that? And a lot of people would be willing to pay quite a lot.
Yeah.
What's that worth next to going through 5, 6, 10 years of figuring things out, doing the wrong things, getting injured along the way? That's what coaching is.
Yeah.
That's what that shortcut is paying someone to not make those mistakes.
Yeah, exactly.
To kind of guarantee your process. And that kind of flows on into what to look for in a coach.
Yeah. So I think there's a few things to look for that make a good coach or a coach with potential. I think the most obvious one is obviously that they coach in the right area. I regularly have people ask me for nutritional advice. The first thing I say is, do I look like a nutritionist? I'm not. I know enough about nutrition to give people guidance and things like that. But when it comes to those sort of areas that I know I don't know anything about, I refer people out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I'm looking for a mechanic, I don't go to a guy that specializes in air conditioning. Right, it's the same idea. You find someone who's coaching in the right area. If you want to be a powerlifter, find a powerlifting coach. Not a personal trainer who likes powerlifting, but a powerlifting coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that applies regardless of the area that you're looking for coaching in.
I think one roadblock that often comes up that sets people on a path down whichever coach they choose can be the financial side of things, right?
Yeah.
And in that sense, right, if you're going to a PT who says they specialize in powerlifting, but they don't really coach any real powerlifters, you know, they put squats, bench, and deadlift in there.
Yeah, just because you squat, bench, and deadlift doesn't make you a powerlifter.
Yeah, exactly. And they're, you know, $20 a week cheaper than XYZ powerlifting coach. How long are you going to have to spend with them relatively to get the same results that you would spend with the specialist?
Yeah.
You know, potentially, you could get there a lot quicker with the specialist, which in the long run is going to save you.
Lifetime value is going to be less.
And it's going to save you a lot of money on the way.
Yeah,
if you have to
spend
6 months versus 1 month with them, why not pay the extra and get the specialist coaching straight up?
The analogy that you get what you pay for, the cliche that you get what you pay for, is certainly relevant in many aspects of coaching. I think developing a really good bullshit meter is really important, because there's a lot of people on the internet that charge a lot of money who don't necessarily provide the value that they are suggesting that they do through the amount of money that they charge. But I think essentially in many ways you do get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And that often then comes down to there's a marketing aspect to that as well, right?
Yes.
The coach that you're paying has to be savvy enough to charge what they're worth. And I think some really good coaches don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to come off across as that, like, salesman sort of thing. And
yeah.
And that's perfectly reasonable, but unfortunately at some point this is a business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have to make a living out of this. But we charge what we're worth because we value our time and our expertise and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's important to be really in tune with the product that you're actually shopping for.
Yeah.
You know, you're not necessarily shopping for strength in general. You're shopping for a stronger version of you. You're shopping for the best that you can be at your chosen endeavor. You don't want to pay someone to be slightly less bad at what you're doing. You want to pay someone to be the best that you can be at whatever that chosen endeavor is.
And
right?
Being the best that you can be doesn't mean you have to be the best.
No, exactly. And that's what I'm getting at. So the person coaching all the top lifters doesn't necessarily mean that they're the best coach. It's the person, that, or the people, I should say, that are producing really reproducible results.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So, you know, when I'm looking at, or say I was looking for a coach, I'd be looking with someone that's, you know, their lifters are all kind of lifting the same. They're all making progress along the way.
Yeah.
Because that's a consistent result. That's a consistent product, you know, and especially in something like lifting, where we are dealing with a lot of individual factors, we're definitely
and also a lot of gray areas as well. Like lots of things in lifting work, but that doesn't make them good policies.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, if I can get, or if someone can get someone, a group of 10 people to all squat looking fairly similarly, despite each person's individual genetics, individual build, if they can all produce the same sort of principles in their lifting, then the coach is presenting consistent information based on what they believe is the best squat, is the best bench, is the best deadlift.
Yeah.
Because all coaches believe that. You know, coaches shouldn't be making XYZ person squat completely different to XYZ person.
Yeah.
So if you can, it's that consistency, that reproducibility, I think is really, really important.
I think to expand on that slightly, you do have to be careful with that end of things, where a coach produces a whole bunch of lifters that look lifting exactly the same fashion that they do.
Yes.
Because often it's what works for me works for everyone, right? Uh-huh. While I definitely agree with you that everyone, like, the fundamental principles are the same, right?
Yes.
Everyone needs to be able to brace their core. Everyone needs to be able to have their knees track in a reasonable position compared with their toes.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone needs a neutral spine. All those sort of things, right? What that manifests, like the end product of that, often looks a little bit different depending on the person.
Yes.
Because how a 6'4" person squats is going to be very different to how I squat.
Definitely. So it's about the expression of those rules.
Exactly. Those principles.
Given the individual.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of people go too far down the other way and go, here's how I squat and here's how you should all squat.
Yes.
And I think that's a really important distinction to make.
Definitely.
Similar but not the same.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I think that sort of then rolls into what makes for a good athlete, right? Now, you can be the best coach in the world, but if you've got shit athletes, you're not going to get any results.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some key factors in what makes a good athlete. I've had some really great athletes. I've had some really terrible athletes. I've got great results with terrible athletes and even better results with really good athletes. Ultimately, I think the big thing comes down to trust, right?
Definitely.
It's the ability to trust the process. Like when I go to a mechanic to fix my car and I hand over a bunch of money to fix them, I trust that it's fixed because I'm paying for that expertise, right? Now, I think, especially in like the strength and conditioning industry and like fitness and that sort of thing, like everyone has an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much about that. And like, there's no other profession I can think of where I would go in and be like, oh, here's my opinion on your profession.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't go to the dentist and be like, I actually, have you read this study about this different way of doing these dental things? It's like I just wouldn't do that.
The equivalent of going to the GP being like, oh, I've got the sore head. Here's a bunch of articles I've printed off Google.
Yeah.
I think this may be the answer. Here, read those, fix me.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me what I want to hear.
Yeah.
And I think that, and like, it's so common. People are like, oh, but we should do it this way. It's like, well, like if you want to do that way, that's cool. Go and do it that way. But don't pay me for my coaching to tell me how to coach you.
And a big part of it comes back to this whole accountability thing. The trust thing is really important. I mean, from me as a coach, I want my lifters to do what I say so that I can watch anything that goes wrong. I can say, here's what I screwed up. Here's what I need to fix with my coaching. Here's what I need to fix with my product to make it better.
Yeah.
And that's how I've gotten better as a coach over the years. I've looked at what I've made mistakes at.
Yeah, exactly.
And because, you know, you want your lifter to give you all this trust.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day for them as well, they can make an accurate statement about, okay, this coach is no good because I did everything they said and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And I went backwards or I got hurt or whatever.
So I tell people regularly, I sort of have like two big principles in how I coach things, right? The first one is having a system for how you do things so that you can replicate the same movement every single time. And we've talked about that in an episode already.
Yes.
But the other one is just trusting me. Know that I always have your best interests at heart.
Mm-hmm.
I will always put you in a position to create success. Because especially in the gym, like I don't want you missing reps in the gym. Because missing reps doesn't make you any stronger. Missing reps doesn't make you a better athlete. I'm always going to put you in a position for success. So if I ask you to do a particular number, it's because I know you are capable of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the only limiting factor becomes the mindset of the athlete, right?
Yes.
I had a perfect example of this just the other day. Mary, one of my clients, came in to do a heavy squat double at 90 kilos. Her best squat at the time is 92.5. She asked me to spot her. She was clearly really nervous. That's cool. But she trusts the process. And she did two reps, and on the second one, I said, go again, and she went again. And on the third one, I said, go again, and on the fourth one, I said, go again. She ended up doing a set of five with probably 3 or 4 reps left in the tank. But what that was a perfect example of she trusts me. She knows that if I say go again, it's because she can do another one. There's an element of athletes who would hear me say go again and go, no, I can't. I only planned a double. And that, like, yeah, there's part of that, like, you psyched up for a double, that's, you know, that's fair enough. But if you truly trust what the coach is saying,
mm-hmm.
you'll just do what they say. And I think that's the best athletes, the people that get the best results in my experience, especially, are the ones that just listen. And they ask questions, which I think is really important, like communicating in general. This is a two-way relationship. The worst athletes I've ever had are the ones who, like, I have to force them to give me feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I have to chase you to ask you how you're doing.
Yeah.
And those sort of things.
And I think, you know, both of us are very similar in that, you know, we love education.
Yep.
We don't have secrets. We're not trying to hold back anything. So the people that are asking the most questions,
they get the most value.
They're going to learn the most. They're going to get the most value.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, the reality of coaching is that if you hire a coach, you're not going to be being coached forever, right?
That's going to be coached. Certainly, my goal has always been from day one in the fitness industry, like working in a small group PT gym. My goal was always to make myself redundant. Like, I want to give you all the knowledge I have so that you don't need me anymore. And where my knowledge is now compared to where it was 5-6 years ago, light years ahead, but that doesn't mean I've stopped passing it on.
Exactly. We're trying to equip people so that by the time they do need to move on, they move city, they lose their job, whatever, but they keep training that they've got all the tools and the skills they need to keep making success.
Yeah,
and based on what they've learned.
And even if that point, I'm just there as a guiding post, you know, like someone to bounce ideas off, things like that. I think that's my ultimate goal, right? Is to get a bunch of athletes who value the process and value your opinion, but don't need you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one of the best examples that I see it all the time. Like I run somewhere between 8 and 10 powerlifting comps a year. This year I've been to powerlifting comps in 4 different states. And one of the biggest things I see from what I would consider to be mediocre coaches is the ones that when their athletes are walking up to the platform, they're running them through coaching cues. Like when you walk up to the platform, you walk past me, especially when I'm hosting the meet, like I stand right next to the platform pretty much all day. My athlete walks past and all they get from me is like, you've got this.
Mm-hmm.
Or some sort of encouragement.
You right? know what to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's that reminder that this is just another rep.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the people that walk up and they want to talk the athlete through the whole thing. Right? Where it's like, here's your whole process. Right? If I have to give you coaching cues on the platform, I haven't done my job in the gym. Because I want you to be at that point where it's almost autonomous. It just happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all comes down to that communication aspect.
Definitely.
Like when I give you a coaching cue, if you don't understand, tell me.
Yep.
Because chances are, be it you, be it me, be it any other good coach, they give you a cue and you don't understand it, they've got several other versions of that cue in their pocket.
Yeah. Our job is to elicit or get you to express those rules.
Yep.
In a way that you understand. We need to deliver a message in a way that you understand. I think that's the skill of not just a good coach, a good teacher, is being able to convey, convey the right message in a variety of different ways, in a variety of different learning styles, and that's going to elicit that the expression of those rules. Coming back to that trusting the process, you use the example of Mary and her squats, right?
Yeah.
A really important thing, especially in the strength games, right? So we're both powerlifting coaches. I'm a powerlifting coach. I coach powerlifting. I don't coach other sports. Powerlifting is my thing.
Yeah.
One thing I really drill into my lifters is that there's only one really important time for you to be at max strength. That's comp day, right?
Yeah, 100%.
A lot of the work that's going to make you as strong as you can be on comp day works against being as strong as you can be at that point in time. So a good example of not trusting the process, not too long ago, I had someone in a hypertrophy phase that was, you know, making this progression to a strength block that was eventually leading to a peak, which was for a comp quite a bit down the track. Yeah. Right? So we were doing the groundwork.
Yeah, building the base.
Yeah, this person decided, well, I want to test where I am. They went for that temptation, which is very common. A lot of people do
super
that.
Common.
They just,
it's an ego thing.
I got to know where I'm at. And I always tell people, you can test, right? If you test against my word, you will be 100% disappointed.
Yeah.
It's not going to work out well for you.
Yep.
And that's what happened. They did a one rep max deadlift and didn't come close to what they thought they should be doing.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, we're saying that we're in a different phase, and the phases that work to building that base to make you as strong as you can be work against you being as strong as you can be at that point.
Yeah,
in time.
Exactly.
And it comes back to what you were saying, is we have your best interest in mind. We want to make you as strong as you can be. We understand the process based on theory, based on experience with lifters, and our job is to make that happen with you.
Yeah.
Your job is to listen to us so we can make
it let it happen.
Yeah.
Not work against that. And I think that comes down to the idea of like having clear expectations, right? In this is a two-way relationship and it always will be. And a good coach-athlete relationship is based on trust. It's based on communication. But it's also got to be based on clear expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come to a powerlifting coach because you want to be better at playing rugby. Right? That's a pretty clear expectation about you've picked the wrong coach, right? But at the same time, there has to be clear expectations about how the relationship works, right? Despite what the internet will tell you, like I'm a coach, I work 6 days a week, I work quite a lot, but you can't contact me 24 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
right? That's unreasonable because no one pays enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend of several years can't contact me 24 hours a day. Like there are times where I won't answer her calls because I'm busy doing something else, right? And I think a lot of people in the age of instant gratification and instant communication think that because they're paying a coach that suddenly like I'm your 24/7 support line.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a clear expectation that needs to be managed straight away, right?
Definitely.
We're not therapists. There's definitely a portion of both our jobs that involves a bit of talking people off the ledge, so to speak. But at the same time, setting that expectation early on, right? You're paying for a coach, not a friend, as mm-hmm. you said before.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, in my experience, I see too many people that have coaches that kind of end in really, really bad relationships personally because either that personal relationship has been crossed and they become too good of friends,
yeah.
then the business suffers for it. Because
yeah.
coaching is a business transaction.
Yeah.
It is a product. You're paying for a product, a service. It is a business transaction. Or those expectations haven't been clear from the start. The coach has grown. The coach has gotten busier. So yeah. rather than being able to chat anytime, the coach starts to respond slower.
Yeah.
And I think,
and I've had to do that as my gym grows, and I've had to tell everyone, look, I won't get back to you straight away, because if I got back to every message I got when I got it, I'd never get anything done.
Yeah.
I'd be replying to messages and emails all day.
And I can relate to that 100% as well, you know, and it's about making sure those expectations mutually are
yeah.
really clearly defined from the start so that everyone's winning.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone's happy. Everyone knows when it's okay to talk, when you can expect a response, and if those expectations are clear from the start, it's going to create a really good coaching relationship.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think the last point on what makes a good good athlete, sorry, we've already really touched on, but that's that idea of asking questions, right? Having the desire to learn more. Some people pay a coach because they don't want to do any of the work. They don't want to think. They just want to do what they're told, and that's cool. If that's all you want out of your coaching experience, that works, that's fine, as long as you trust the process and you communicate how that process is working. But I also think the ones that get the most value out of the coaching are the people that ask the best questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people shy away from asking questions because they feel like their questions are stupid.
Yep.
They're not.
Never.
Not
Sorry,
never.
Shouldn't speak in absolutes.
The ballpark I use for measuring whether your question is stupid or not is this dude who I had once who asked me about if I'd ever heard of powerlifters using this high carb, high protein, high salt bulking food that they feed to pigs.
Okay.
And I was like, so why? And he was like, oh, like for bulking, you know, putting on size. I said, okay, wouldn't we just eat the pigs? And I was like, oh yeah, but I'm like, oh, I'm not sure I've ever heard of a powerlifter using pig feed to get stronger. Maybe they eat the pigs that eat the pig feed, but not the feed itself. So that's my ballpark, right? Until you beat that, there isn't such thing as a stupid question. And the thing is, like, in case you haven't, if you've, you know, watched a couple of these episodes already, you've probably picked up on the fact that Thomas and I are quite passionate about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, neither of us are rolling in buckets of cash. We're not doing this because the money's amazing and, you know, we're both living in giant mansions with servants and stuff. We do it because we love what we do and we love talking about what we do. That's why we're doing a podcast. We enjoy talking about this stuff. And so if you ask the question, I'm always happy to answer it. Regardless of how many times I've answered that question before, I'm always happy to answer it again.
And I mean, I can't speak for John, but I know I love being wrong.
Me too.
I love it when a question challenges my
yep.
ideals and I really need to question it myself. I really need to dig deep and think.
My favorite answer is I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So, and we're the kind of people that if we get challenged with a question that we don't know, we're going to tell you we don't know, but we will go out and try our best to get you an answer
yeah.
from someone who does know. And I think, you know, that's an important part for us as coaches to get smarter, to learn more. And a big part of that comes from people asking questions.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I look at how my coaching has evolved over several years. Even 6 months ago, I programmed differently. A year ago, I programmed very differently.
Yeah.
And I look at the programs that I've given people and they've gotten amazing results on these. And I think, yeah, but how can that be better? You know,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Where did things go wrong? Where did things not work as well as they could? And how can we make this better?
Yeah.
And, you know, my program's very different to what it was six months ago.
The best example I've got for this, I walked into my old rugby club a couple of years ago. We were in there for a friend was getting married and we were doing like a wedding day gym session, getting a sweet pump on. And We just had another technical malfunction. Powerlifting. And the point that we left off on was talking about that idea of like growth, right? And sort of growing in your knowledge and how you do things and that sort of thing. And I was saying that I went to back to my old rugby club and I was doing some training in the gym there, and I found a program that I'd written years and years, years ago that made me feel really uncomfortable. Like the cringe factor was really high there, because that program works. Like it's gotten results for people, it's still getting results and it's fine, but for what I know now, it's really terrible. And the point we were making there was that idea that like, if you don't look back on the things you did years ago and you're not a little bit embarrassed by them, perhaps you haven't really grown. And I think growing is, now it's going to be a fly in the podcast. Great. That growth in knowledge, in wisdom, in like in how you communicate and all of those sort of things, I think that's really important. I know that as I get better as a coach, I use less words. Like I say less because I can get more across with fewer words.
Yes.
And I think that growth part is really important.
Definitely. Definitely. And, lifters asking questions and challenging your ideals is so important for us to learn as coaches. Yeah. Because we can admit what we don't know.
Yeah, my favorite answer to questions is I don't know.
Mm.
Because if I don't know, it means I genuinely don't know or I'm unsure. And so I'll go and do my best to find the knowledge that you ask for.
Yeah. And
if I don't know it or I can't find it, I'll send you to someone who I trust, who I know has more knowledge than I do.
Exactly. And I know we both work closely with people that are much smarter than us.
Yeah, 100%.
And we have relationships with people who are smarter than us that we can bounce ideas off, so we can learn, so our athletes can learn when they ask us questions. And I'm exactly the same as you. You know, I look back on programs 6 months ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, and I see it, how much it'll change. And, you know, we were talking before about this idea of confidence versus cockiness. And I think a good coach needs to be really confident in what they believe at that point in time, but still be open-minded. I think when you go cocky, you get closed-minded, you stop learning. Yeah. You still need to be open-minded. You need to be confident in what you believe, but be resigned to the fact that what you believe right now, you probably won't in 2 years. Or it'll change, it'll grow. And I look back on programs 5 years and I think, when I wrote that, I wrote it, hit enter, hit save, I'm like, I'm done. Yep. This is it. I never have to work again. I never have to write another program because I just wrote
it. Put numbers into a spreadsheet, give it to people.
Yeah.
Job done.
Exactly. And then, you know, you look on that and you think, wow, this produced results at the time.
And still probably does.
And still probably would. The best... applicable to everyone? Definitely not.
No.
Definitely not. It needs to grow. It needs to evolve. Yeah. It needs to change. It needs to be individualized. But, we look back and we look at things that we believe so firmly then, and it's very different now. And I look at things I believe so firmly now, and I hope in a year's time that it's different.
Yeah.
I hope I'm looking back on this and thinking, that was good at the time, but this is better right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that sort of rolls nicely into... What attributes don't make for good coaches? Now, this most often comes up in the discussion between what makes a good athlete and what makes a good coach, right? Because especially in an industry that is largely built on social media marketing and expressing yourself through that, I think a lot of people get success in powerlifting or strength sports in general, and suddenly they want to start being a coach, right? Now, I know that's how I got into it. I'm sure that's how you got into it as well. We found a passion for something. You want to pass on that passion, right? Now, I've never been super successful as an athlete. Like, I don't claim to be an amazing athlete. I did some good things. I've set some national records. I've won some medals, like, you know, that sort of thing. But I'm not an elite athlete, and I don't pretend to be.
At GPC Equipped Nationals, did you win that overall?
Okay. I think I out-squatted you, and that's all that really matters. So... that's what counts. And outsquatted you by quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
But the rest of it we won't talk about.
No.
But I think it's really important to look at not just their athletic prowess, right? Because there are several reasons really good athletes don't make good coaches. The first of which, and probably the most obvious, is that to be a really good athlete in many ways, you have to be quite selfish.
Mm-hmm.
You have to dedicate a lot of your own time and energy to yourself. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that if that's your chosen path. I know I'm not an elite athlete. Before we had camera malfunctions, we were talking about this. Like, my goal in my own training is not to be the best powerlifter I can be at the moment. It certainly has been in the past. It's not right now because it's just not a huge priority in my life. I have other things I'm working on and things like that. I'm still trying to be strong. I'm still trying to improve on all of my areas of weakness, but not purely from a powerlifting sports perspective. I know you're a little bit different in that and you're putting more effort into that. And that's, I think, totally reasonable. There's nothing wrong with either of those options. But neither of us put as much effort into our own training as we do that of our lifters, because that's not how we make a living.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a big difference between an athletic mindset of a very good, high-performing athlete.
Yeah.
I learned that we had Brett Gibbs come and train with us, right? He did a bench session. And then afterwards, we were doing accessories. It's
called bench.
Oh, sorry, a bench session?
Yeah.
I can't even put on a New Zealand accent anymore. Shows how long I've been away. We did some rows after that. We were doing seated rows on a cable row machine, right? We did like half the stack for a few reps, and then Brett goes, do you want to do the full thing? I'm like, yeah, I do. So I jumped on first and I did 7 reps, right? And then he jumped on and he did 7. He stopped and he looked up at me and he goes, how many was that? And then he kept going. He went to like 13. I was like, okay, this is how it's going to be. Because I'm a competitive person.
As am I.
Why we revel on competition, right?
Yeah.
I love competition. I always want to win when I'm in a competition. So I jumped on, I did 13. I stopped, I looked at him and I was like, how many is that? And I kept going. I did like 17. Right? Immediately, he jumps on, he does 17, does the same thing. How many was that? And kept going. And when he did that, because I'd gone max effort on.
Yeah, that was
when he did that, I was like, it doesn't matter how fatigued, how broken we are. He's here to win this.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And even though I'm competitive and I want to win, I don't have that next level of competitiveness. And I think when I realized that, and that was probably 2.5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, it was like, all right, I want to be the best powerlifter I can be, but I'm not a champion. I don't have that mindset. Yeah. And I don't need that mindset because I want to be the best coach that I can.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is my mindset. And 100%. They are two very different things.
Yeah, exactly.
And it comes back to what you were saying there about if you want to be the best athlete you can be, you need to live and breathe your athletic.
And you have to make sacrifices, right?
Definitely.
And I think that's the same with excelling at any area in life.
Yes.
Like the idea of balance is largely, I think, misappropriated. Like to be really successful at something, you have to be a little bit unbalanced.
Yeah.
If you want to be a successful athlete, you're going to have to sacrifice things in other areas. For me to be a successful coach, I sacrificed a large portion of my powerlifting career. I still competed in powerlifting. I competed like 4 weeks ago. I had probably one of the best raw comps I've ever had in my life. I had a great time doing it, but one of the reasons I had a great time doing it is because there wasn't any pressure on me.
Yeah.
It wasn't me putting a bunch of pressure on me to be the best. It was me doing what I love, which is training and competing.
And I mean, you know, I've obviously seen your journey over the last few years, and you've still made a shitload of progress.
Yeah,
you know, you're still
putting in fuck all effort, which has been great.
Yeah, and I mean, it's connected to your obvious love for what you're doing when you do it.
Yeah,
you know, and there's you know, that's very gratifying. I can speak from personal experience on that as well. I've made a shitload of progress. Even though I'm not as, even though I don't care as much about my own powerlifting endeavors anymore because I've shifted that focus.
Yeah.
And I think it's I think you can be a great athlete and a great coach at the same time.
And that's the really important thing. The two are not mutually exclusive.
Yes.
But one does not follow the other.
Uh-huh.
Just because you're a good athlete doesn't mean you're a good coach, and vice versa.
Yes.
I think often the best coaches are mediocre athletes because the ones that are somewhat mediocre have to work really hard to get those results, right? And this follows into the next sort of couple of points we're going to talk about, where you look at, like, the best athletes are the best athletes. Like, they're genetically gifted, right? I watched a video on, it's doing the rounds on Facebook, dude did like 130-centimeter vertical leap. Like, that's pure athleticism. You can't teach that. That dude was born like that. He like jumps and hovers. Like there's a whole second of this slow-mo video where it looks like he's stationary in the air. That's pure athleticism. You can't teach that. The best training and program in the world won't give you that. That guy's got gifts, right? And I think the best athletes, especially in powerlifting, are often freaks.
Yeah, definitely.
And the problem with that is whatever you throw at that person will work. And what that, I think, generally creates is like a fairly narrow-minded approach, right?
Definitely, because very tunnel vision.
Yeah, because whatever you try ends up working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with a lot of people, that tunnel vision then leads into, well, here's my method. Well, maybe your method works well for you because you're a freak.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you're then trying to pass that on to everyone else. You know, like we talked about it before, we talked about making mistakes and things like that. You and I have tried everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I've trained West Side.
Yeah.
I've done Shaco. I've done
Smoller,
yeah.
531, done it all.
Yeah, all of that sort of stuff. And I've found the thing that works best for me, and but also for the athletes that I coach.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to doing one method going, wow, I got amazing results with that. I'm just going to do that from now on.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's where a lot of athletes lose the open-mindedness that you need to be a really good coach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I heard it spoken about in another podcast around top-tier people. You know, for every person right at the top, there's a whole bunch of people doing very similar things that you never hear about because it breaks them. You know?
Yeah.
You know, so how many people have suffered a career-ending back injury because they've tried deadlifting with a rounded back because they saw a top deadlifter lifting with a rounded back? These people at the top are often genetic exceptions to the rules.
Exactly.
And those rules will apply to 99.9% of people.
And it's often the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because, rather than the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, like, I always like the Bulgarian era, right? Like Ivan Abajayev in weightlifting, that was a brute force method. If you don't know about the Bulgarian method, go and look at the Juggernaut, the Jug Life podcast with good friends of ours, Chad Wesley Smith, and
shameless name drop.
Yeah, name drop. Wait until he's on the podcast. It'll be even better. One of his coaches, Max Ada, actually trained under Abajayev. That's a brute force method.
Mm-hmm.
They created some amazing champions. No one talks about the hundreds of athletes that I'm sure they broke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like just completely ran into the ground.
Yeah,
because it's a brute force approach.
Yeah, I mean it's like the Navy SEALs. You know, it's this natural selection process where it's not. It's deselection.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weeding out the people that aren't genetically exceptional.
Yeah.
By breaking them.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of, yeah, because we see it all the time. People that come up to us and say, "Well, so and so deadlifts like this, works for them." Yeah, it works for them.
But does it though? And that's the thing we've talked about is, it works for them, but could it work better?
Yeah.
The round back deadlift is the best one.
Yeah.
Right? I think a lot of people will talk about this like idea of a rounded upper back deadlift. Because KK, Constantine Konstantinovas, deadlifts like a freak like that. Now, he's a freak. Like a legitimate, like just absolute freak.
Uh-huh.
Because it works for him, people are like, oh, well, it works for me now as well. But I think you miss, then could it work better?
Yeah, exactly.
Could you be more efficient? Could you be in a better position? Could you apply the brute force that you have in a better way?
In a better movement, exactly. Exactly, and a lot of people miss that piece of the puzzle because they focus on this kind of elite group. We deal with this process with applying people's strength to a better pattern of movement, and we watch it produce amazing results.
Yeah,
because that's what works, and that kind of thinking up here is very, very narrow-minded, very, very closed-minded. I mean, you get it with Milanchev as well. Oh, Milanchev squats like this with his elbows right forward and his wrist cocked back, you know. Like, well, yeah, you can go and do that for a month. And when you can't bench, you can come back and see me. We can fix your squat position. And then you can continue being a powerlifter.
And then you can remind yourself why you're not Milanchev.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because you're not him. You're not genetically him.
Yeah.
You don't do what he does. You don't have the base that he does. You don't take whatever he takes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of factors. It's not just... this is what they do, and therefore I do it, I turn into...
That ties into just the approach for the internet in general. A lot of people want to look at what the best lifters do. And I had a fundamentals course, I talked about this on the weekend, that idea of a pyramid, right? Like Milanchev's at the top of that pyramid. All he does is squat, bench, and deadlift. Does that mean all you and I should do is squat, bench, and deadlift? Fuck no. Because neither you nor I are Andrei Milanchev, and none of the athletes we coach are Andrei Milanchev. And it's that idea that you want to take what the elite are doing right now and do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not always the best method. Like if you want to play AFL, you don't just turn up on a Saturday afternoon at the MCG and expect a kick.
Mm-hmm.
you start from the bottom and you work, you earn the right to get there, right? You can't just start with the elite methods and work from there. Mm-hmm. It has to be based on what your training age is, what your experience levels are, all of those sort of things. If you try and just cherry pick from the elite, then you're not going to make any progress in the long term. Short term, you might make quite a bit of progress, and that's cool. That's where this becomes a self-defeating prophecy, right?
Exactly.
You make those short-term gains, you're like, oh, well, fuck, this works, so I'll do it again, and maybe it works again. And then you do it again, and you get hurt.
Yeah.
And something holds you back at that point.
Because the strength is the easy part. Right. Getting strong is the easy part.
Getting strong is really, really fucking easy.
Yeah.
It takes hard work and time.
Yeah. Being a good lifter, that's hard.
Totally different ballgame. And I think that, I like the idea that you should get good and then get strong. Because if you get strong, getting good's much harder.
Yeah.
Because you have to unlearn all these patterns, right? Unlearn all these positions that you put yourself in.
Yeah.
Whereas if you get really good first, that's why my focus with any new lift is always technique first. Get you in the right positions to exhibit the strength that you have,
mm-hmm.
and then we can build the strength from there.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what I've built my business on. That's where my coaching success has been, is taking XYZ lifter and getting them quickly back to being where they were with better technique, with better movement, and then watching them skyrocket.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? Rather than taking XYZ lifter, throwing a shitload of volume at them, and hoping they get even more stronger than what they are already.
Yeah.
Without breaking, you know, on a wing and a prayer. No. Yeah. We want to ensure that you're getting stronger in the right pattern of movement to prevent those injuries from happening.
Exactly. And I think one of the other factors, and probably one of the last ones we'll touch on, is be wary of any coach or any professional in any industry, I think, that speaks in super technical terms.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, like, I presented to a room full of PTs and trainers over the weekend, and I can talk about flexion extension at the hip and external rotation and all that. Like, I can use all the technical terms, but I don't have to.
No, exactly.
And I always, like, I've worked in childcare. That's what I did before I got into the fitness industry. I think if you can't explain it to a five-year-old, you don't truly understand.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to use all those technical terms, I think it often stems from a place of insecurity. Because you're insecure about your own knowledge, and so you feel the need to use those terms in order to express your own knowledge. But I think the best coaches, the best professionals in any area, don't need that.
No,
because they're confident, right? It comes back to that confidence thing you talked about before.
Yeah, you need to be able to speak to your audience.
Exactly.
So if I was coaching someone like you, I can afford to speak in technical terms.
Yeah.
If I'm coaching someone brand new to lifting, I don't need to talk about external rotation.
No, just bend your knees.
We can take the understanding that we have and apply it into a language that still makes sense, that still produces the desired end result.
Yeah.
And along the way, educate that person.
Yes.
To understand why.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think the mark of a really good coach is that they're not just saying, hey, this is what we do. They're saying, hey, this is why we do it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a nice point to end on. Do you have anything to add to what we've talked about so far?
No, I think it's great. I think at the end of the day, this isn't a sales pitch for us. This is a sales pitch for coaching. I think there is a big case for coaching. We're both very coaches already, very busy coaches already. And I think
we don't need your business. That's not what we're saying.
No, but I think there's a big case for coaching out there.
Yeah.
It's something that I wish I did when I started out. It's about, ensuring your results and ensuring that you get there quicker in the best way possible.
And to summarize that, I think the best way you can look at coaching is it's not an expense, it's an investment. You're investing in your future, be that in powerlifting or business or whatever area you're getting that coaching in. It's an investment, right? If you look at it as an investment rather than just an expense, I think you're far more likely to take on board what you're getting, and you're going to get way more value out of that.
Mm. Excellent.
Sweet.
Let's leave it there. Where can they find you, John?
How people can find you? You can follow my gym, Burly Strength. We're on Facebook and Instagram. It's just at Burly Strength. You can follow me on Facebook or Instagram. Instagram, I'm at @Shero_BurlyStrength. That's about all the places that I am.
Mm-hmm.
Where can they find you, Thomas?
PTC Gold Coast is my gym, so you can follow PTC Gold Coast on Facebook or Instagram, Or on Instagram, I post a lot of coaching videos and things like that at TomBro7.
Also, lots of dog videos worth checking out. Sweet. Until next time, guys. Thanks for watching.
Thank you.